Hey everybody, this is Justin. Thanks for tuning in this week. I've got two great guests for everyone this week. One is Jesse Clegg, an awesome South African musician who's touring the States right now. And the other is a local Pennsylvania guy named Tom, who is a really awesome graphic designer working with a couple artists that you might know on a new project. So check out what they have to say. And that's really all I got for you today. Enjoy the show.
All of those words, all of those places. Giving my life, you just replaced it. Oh, 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 oh. Why does it feel like you've been lying? You have a secret world. Trying way too long just to try fit in. Let me out, I can't breathe in here. All you need from me, I'm your souvenir. All of those words, all of those places, all of
That was Souvenir by Jesse Clegg, and this is The Farsighted.
You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
Singer-songwriter, just released my third album titled Things Unseen, doing a
big North American tour at the moment, 35 shows, including Canada and all over the States. And it's the second tour that I've done here. And yeah, it's been an awesome experience so far.
How long have you been stateside so far?
How long have I what?
How long have you been here? Like, how far into the tour are you right now?
We're about a week in. We've done 5 shows, got 30 to go.
Oh, man. So you got a while. You're going to be here for a little while longer, huh?
Yeah. I'll be here until May.
Okay, cool. And, well, it sounds like if you're going to be here till May and you got 30 more shows, sounds like you don't have a ton of nights off. You're going to be playing quite a bit, huh?
Yeah, no, there's not that much time off. I mean, we basically leave on the 2nd of May. So we're here for another, like, 5 weeks, and we've got pretty much 5 shows a week.
That's cool. And so the other days are probably your travel days, I'd assume.
Yeah, we're either traveling or we've got the day off for, you know, sorting out everything.
So are you out here with, are you out here with like a full band, or is it just you, or?
It's me and another musician named Gavin Shea.
Okay.
We're doing a sort of acoustic, semi-electric, electronic kind of set. So I'm playing acoustic guitar and doing some vocoder stuff and some sort of more electronic kind of stuff on the guitar. And he's playing a little Rhodes synth keyboard and he's playing MIDI drum and vocals, and he also plays a bit of guitar. So it's kind of a nice mix between acoustic and electronic.
Kinda That's like, pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the album is quite an electronic sound, so we were just like, you know what, if we're going to do it sort of stripped down, we must still try and keep the production elements that were you know, are a big part of the album. So, we've kind of got this cool little interesting combination going.
Yeah, it sounds, you know, reminiscent a little bit to some of the stuff Bright Eyes did when he was doing, like, his acoustic / electronic stuff together.
I'm going to check that out. I haven't heard that.
Yeah, and if you were to describe overall, like, you know, your influences, your sound, your who would be your, you know, people that should check you out, like the top, what would you say?
I mean, I listen to a lot of different styles of music. You know, I come from Africa, so a lot of world music I grew up on, and then, you know, all the obvious ones, Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins, like all the 90s grunge bands I kind of started listening to when I was younger.
Okay.
And now, you know, I've got quite eclectic taste, so I really enjoyed the last James Blake album.
Okay.
Listening to a band called Son, S-O-H-N, also European.
Okay.
Hozier, a couple of, you know, I enjoyed the Black Keys' last album, Coldplay. it's a mixed bag.
So really a little bit of everything. So everything from, you know, your rock influences to your pop stuff to your folk to your name it,
yeah.
The world music.
And,
sounds
you
like
know,
you
Radiohead,
have a wide variety
was
of stuff, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this album is a combination of just straight up pop to some kind of Lana Del Rey, Radiohead. Like it kind of veers from very mainstream to quite experimental.
Okay, cool. And so it sounds like, you know, you probably have a sound that would appeal to a lot of different people. You know, because it definitely hits on a lot of different notes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I come from a singer-songwriter background, so, you know, the fundamentals are still songwriting and trying to be relatable.
Right.
But I think that with all the, you know, production choices that are available now, with technology and especially doing something that was more electronic, it just opened the road to do some fun, cool stuff that, you know, 5 years ago were not available, I guess.
Right. That makes sense. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the cities you've hit so far and, you know, what the shows have been like?
Okay, cool. Yeah, we did Washington last night, which was great. Played at the Lisner Auditorium. Okay. We did. Geez, I'm just trying to think, man. It's been such a blur. We did a great show at it was one of the first shows in Florida, Orlando. Really great. And we've done about three shows in Orlando in different spots. Yeah, I mean, look, the response has been great, and it's always been interesting to see. You know, obviously I'm more South African based. I've played a lot more shows in South Africa, and it's just been interesting to see how the new stuff is going down compared to the last tour. And I definitely feel like we're more on target with this album.
Oh, cool!
I think the last album was more sort of rock, guitar orientated, more of a, you know, a rock vibe, classic rock vibe. And this has been, I think we've been able to expand a little bit in terms of the sound and present the songs in a way that I think people are more used to hearing in America. You know, it's also, you know, we're very far away. So the music tastes in South Africa are, you know, it's evolving on a different path. So it's been good to know that we're kind of checking both markets, I guess.
That's good. Definitely. And, you said you toured here once before. Have you been to Philadelphia before?
Yeah, we've played Philadelphia before.
Oh, cool.
Actually, man, Philadelphia is one of the best shows from the tour last year. It's really, I can't wait to get to Philly. We have 3 days there, and it's such a cool town. It's so beautiful, man. I wasn't expecting it. We went to, like, a whole lot of museums and, like, checked out the constitutional halls, and we were like classic tourists in that town.
I'm a transplant. I'm not originally from Philly. Originally grew up closer to New York City. I mean, it's only a couple hours away, but in New Jersey. But I moved down here for college and never left. And Philly is just an interesting city with all the history. As far as in our country here, like, I mean, it was our first nation's first capital, so there's a lot of really old stuff there.
I didn't even know any of that, man. I never knew that Philly had such a sort of historical relevance. I thought it was just another town.
right. That's totally fair. Yeah, I mean, obviously you've been there, so you've seen that a lot of the buildings are real old,
and
I think the architecture is so gorgeous. That's one of the things that drew me.
Man.
Yeah.
We would just walk through the streets, man, and just check it out. It was just it was like, you know, you go through so many cities on these tours, and you kind of get to see the block that you happen to be on, wherever the venue is. That's the sort of block that you kind of walk around, and that's your impression of the city. But I felt like almost anywhere you go in Philly, it's kind of got something interesting and beautiful. So I was quite psyched.
Do you remember what venue you played last time you came through?
I don't remember the name, man, but I can send it to you. I'll find out.
Oh, yeah, okay. I was just curious because, like, what part of town you were in. I mean, obviously, most of the venues are downtown-ish.
Yeah, I think we were downtown, and we actually explored a bit. It was, like, one of the few places that we actually had a bit of time to kind of walk out and go to some museums, and so we were the classic African tourists, man.
I know, that's cool. That's awesome, and I think it's a good city to tour, so I'm glad you got a chance to do that. And here, I guess you're going to be playing at the Annenberg Center this time coming through, so that's pretty cool.
Definitely awesome.
And that's actually a venue that I've not been to, so, you know, you'll have to tell me how it is. Unfortunately, like I said, I can't make it, but I would love to.
I'll let you know.
Definitely. So I'll ask you from South Africa how my city is.
Yeah, I'll tell you how your city is, man. You just count on me, bro.
When you came through before, did you get a chance to get an authentic Philadelphia cheesesteak?
No, I didn't. But I had an epic pizza, man. We've got pizza on the rider for every show.
Okay.
So we're kind of sampling the pizzas at every town.
Okay, well, that's fair. Philly's got some good pizza too. I will say that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one of the few things that growing up in northern New Jersey near Manhattan, I was a pizza snob, but I found that while the pizza the good pizza places are fewer and far between once I get away from Manhattan. And, there are places that are just as good as long as you hunt them down. So
yeah, well, everyone is looking forward to the deep dish pizzas in Chicago. Apparently, there's an amazing pizza place in Chicago with deep dish.
Oh, there's
pizzas
quite a few. Yeah, that's their thing. Chicago is the land of the deep dish. My friends from Chicago and I argue regularly about what real pizza is. Is it hand tossed or is it a deep dish? So.
It's a very important debate, man.
It is. In America, we really only argue about the important things, you know.
Yeah.
So.
that's what's great. That's what makes your country great.
So, I've never been to South Africa, and I actually don't know a ton about it. I have one friend that I've kept in touch with who came out here to work at a summer camp that I was working at, actually, and that's how I met him, and we've kept in touch. But outside of that one friend, I don't know a ton about South Africa. You said that, the music scene's a little different there. What's it like playing out there?
I think there's a lot of different influences musically. You know, there's obviously a lot of African music, a lot of Kwaito, and house music is very big. I mean, there's a big electronic scene there. You know, it's house, and there's there's a lot of the big names are DJs, but it's interesting electronic music. It's not just your standard sort of Avicii like pop stuff. It's more like they'll sample like interesting African stuff, and then they'll use that under electronic grooves. In fact, you may know of a guy. He's probably the biggest artist in the country at the moment. His name is Black Coffee. He's actually playing Coachella this year.
Okay, maybe that's where I saw him at a Coachella ad or something, yeah.
Yeah, and so he's probably a good representation of the electronic stuff that's happening. As opposed to, the band and rock stuff, rock is dying out in South Africa, I think. I think it's getting smaller and smaller. But there's a lot of bands that are coming out with, slightly more electronic, slightly more up-to-date versions of those kinds of formats, and mm-hmm. there's some great acts, man. You should check out a band called Monarch. There's a band called Gangs of Ballet, which are really cool, and it's growing. I mean, look, we're a small country, so it's obviously we don't have the numbers that America has, but there's definitely a bit of a scene happening now. There's more and more festivals popping up. We're getting a lot of international acts. I think Nicki Minaj played there last week.
Oh wow.
But we're kind of becoming a good touring stop for a lot of internationals, which is I think good. It kind of exposes people to what's happening in the rest of the world, it's a great place, man. I mean, every time I go overseas, I realize we have a really cool country. It's got great weather, it's very cheap, good lifestyle. So I don't know, it's there's no place like home, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's totally fair. I mean, being from America, we're, I swear, different regions of this country are almost like completely different countries. we're so big and expansive and different all over. But I mean, I'm sure if you've toured around the country, you can see the vast difference in sensibilities between the Midwest and the coasts. And
totally,
I mean,
sometimes it feels like we're in a different part of the world, man.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, when I have friends, from the Midwest, and it's just vastly different, and not better or worse, just different,
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. And but that said, having very little, knowledge of South Africa, I only know, the real basic historical things, and apartheid and Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
That's really all I know. I mean,
Jeez, man. It's like saying the only thing you know about Germany is the Holocaust, dude. That's
right, exactly. I mean,
a little bit
true,
more
right?
to it.
I know, yeah. What is the culture and climate in South Africa, now, however 20, 30 years, whatever it's been now since that whole been busted up?
Yeah, man. I mean, look, we're a very young democracy. I mean, we became a democracy in 94, so it's just been a couple of years over 20 years.
Right.
And, there's been a lot of improvements. It's a free and open country now. There's no racial segregation, obviously, and it's everything's opened up. It's a lot more relaxed and liberal and open. There's obviously still problems. I mean, you know, as a young country, you kind of have to sort out all your growing pains, and you know, so there's still problems with xenophobia, and there's still some racial tensions, and there's, you know, education problems and corruption and stuff like that in the government.
Although that doesn't sound a whole lot different than here, and we've got hundreds
of years. You know, and
that's
the thing. It's like, you know, in South Africa, we're very hard on ourselves, I think, because, you know, we had such amazing leaders who got us to this point, and we just want to kind of do them proud in a way. And
right.
So I think people are very aspirational in South Africa. You know, we know the potential that we can reach as a country. And so every setback kind of freaks us out a bit. But I think all in all, like, it's a very special place. I mean, the lifestyle there is just amazing. And it's improving. It's every year it gets a little bit better, a little bit more open. And we're dealing with these issues. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's very hard to sum up a country in a few sentences, but,
I can't even summarize, the little tiny town I live in outside of Philadelphia in a couple
sentences.
Exactly. So I get it.
I think that if you were a tourist coming to South Africa, I think you'd be totally impressed and blown away by how modern and chilled out it is. You know, it's a modern place, dude. Like, you know, we have pretty much everything that you guys have, except on a very small scale.
Yeah, well, and that's fair. I mean, and we're just big, you know, I mean, and America does everything bigger, even though a lot of times that also means more expensive and more gaudy. And
you know, I don't think we have the same sort of consumer culture. Like, you know, I don't see as many brands and you know, billboards and advertising. Like, we haven't gotten to that point yet, you know. So,
well, hopefully you don't get to that point. Maybe you guys can keep the culture from getting quite there, because I think that's not necessarily one of our stronger suits out here, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, with that comes, you know, technology and ease of access.
Right, that's true.
And, you know, there's a lot of, there's pros and cons, you know. Like, for us, like, internet access, like, you know, internet access is not as freely available in South Africa. You know, like, there's, like, I find myself just connecting to free Wi-Fi all the time. It sounds like such a silly thing.
Right.
But, like, the internet, dude, is, like, such an important part of having a business. And if the internet is not generally available to, like, thousands and thousands of businesses for cheap prices, then that is a setback, you know. So, like, those kinds of, like, things that, you know, technology and being a first world country offer, you know, we sort of on the road to that, but we're not 100% there yet. So I don't know. In general, it's a great place.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, you know, it's funny. Like, we're out here, we would complain about only having, you know, one or two internet providers available to us, as opposed to, you know, having the internet. Because everywhere you go, you have at least one or two providers available.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I mean, and that's. You know, just like cell phone coverage. I mean, God forbid we have a tiny pocket where, you know, it goes out, you know, and that's, and that's even rare. I mean, even in the country, it's becoming more rare, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. And I mean, so ultimately, you know, we're definitely very much on the technology side, but at the same time, I think the consumer culture has its good and bad. That makes a lot of sense.
I think it makes you dissatisfied with everything, because you have so many options that you never know whether you've made the right choice, I guess, because the options are endless.
That's true.
So you're always unsatisfied with any option you go with.
And I'm interested, of course, you've only been stateside for a short period so far, but I'm interested in seeing, you know, it's a very weird period of time here in America right now, because it's election season, and election season is always weird. But right now we have, you know, Donald Trump leading one side of the polls, which is really weird. And I think people I know internationally, and I don't know if it's something people really talk about out by you, but it's the other folks I know internationally find it really odd and laughable.
Yeah. I mean, it is strange.
Yeah. And I live here and I find it odd and laughable.
It's funny, man. Like, I don't know if you've been checking out The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, who's actually a South African comedian who took over The Daily Show. And he was making a whole lot of comparisons to Trump and some another politician in South Africa named Malema, who's a populist, and he has all these scary ideas, and he's kind of a loudmouth, and he just kind of says anything and doesn't check his facts. and he made these interesting comparisons, and you just kind of realize that, you know, these are sort of political phases that every country sort of has to go through.
Sure.
And, you know, sometimes, like, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like Obama kind of left a lot of people unhappy, strangely. I mean, he's a very popular president, I think, internationally, but maybe America, maybe he's not as popular. So that was, like, for me, that was revealing, actually coming to America and seeing that there was a lot of dissatisfaction with Obama's sort of presidency, and, you know, people want something different. So I guess we didn't really get to see that side of it internationally.
Yeah.
And, you know, the internal politics are complex, man. I mean, I don't want to make bold claims about
something
that I'm still learning, but yeah, I mean, it's totally weird to me. I'm not a Trump supporter, and I don't feel like he is a good call for, like, the
right.
most important
country
in the
good
world.
Call for anybody in the world, actually.
Yeah, like even for a reality show, he's not a good call.
Right. Yeah, I mean, come on. But the crazy thing, you know, about it all is that, you know, I being from here, being someone who voted for Obama twice, I'm actually quite happy with a lot of him, but.
He seems from a distance to be a very smart guy, and he solved a lot of big problems that America was facing. So
it's bizarre
to me. You know,
and
as a totally like neutral observation, like it seems like there's a quite a big fracture between the left and the right in America, and you know the on the left there's a socialist, extremely liberal candidate in Bernie Sanders, and then on the far right there's Trump. So you can kind of see a reflection of how divided people are in a way. I mean, I don't know what could be the cause of that, but obviously, you know, you guys have just come out of a economic depression and all that stuff. So, you know, extreme things happen, I guess, politically.
Yeah. I mean, and what's interesting is, you know, I think what we've seen is a period of time, not since, you know, at least in my lifetime, I'm 34, you know, so it's probably the first time in my lifetime, Obama was the first time I think we saw this harsh a divide between the parties and between what they represented. And, you know, I can't help but think it has to do with the fact he's black, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's just so much deep-seated, unspoken racial tension between the parties that, because, I mean, it's not, you know, news that the GOP's strongest supporters are all rich white men. And old rich white men. And so, you know, whereas the Democrats, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of old rich white men behind the Democrats, too, but there's also a broader variety of people that are, you know, the powers in the Democratic side. And I think that ideal has a lot to do with this divide. And, you know, having brought up apartheid, you know, I it's interesting is that, you know, you guys are struggling in still, like, you know, just fighting some of the I guess the stereotypes and showing, you know, you said you're harder on yourselves, you know.
Yeah.
But we, you know, slavery ended, you know, forever
hundreds
ago.
Of years ago,
and and you know, even our civil rights movement was at this point 50 years ago, you know, and yet we're still struggling with this stuff.
You know?
I mean,
well, it reminds me of a line my dad often used to say when South Africa was going through that whole transition where the new can't be born because the old refuses to die.
Okay.
It seems like there's a whole group of people who are into, you know, a non-racial equality modern society, and then there's another group of people who like it the way it was and just refuse to let it go, and then that conflict comes out in a racial tension ultimately, because you know Trump likes to scapegoat the minorities, and that's a very dangerous thing. You know, if you look at you know, Germany and in the cities, that was exactly what was
right.
happening. You know, they were scapegoating minorities, and it's such an easy way out of any problem. Oh, well, it's this group of people's fault that we're having this problem. And it's
right.
such a simplistic way of seeing it. You know, it's basically avoiding all the facts.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, in South Africa, you know, there's still those problems where there's racial tensions that just suddenly reveal themselves. You know,
sure.
and you're like, wow, you know, the last 3 years we've been perfect, and now all of a sudden everyone hates
Boom.
Each other. You know,
yeah.
how did this happen? And, you know, I mean, I guess it never really goes away. It just sometimes it just flares up. And,
well,
I mean,
I think
you know,
I think you brought up the point, though, is that, you know, the old, you know, refuses to die in a sense. And I think once it does, though, I think it's big. Like, I mean, you know, I have kids. My kids are 5 and 7 years old at this point. I really have a hard time believing in their generation there's going to be as much. I mean, because our generation, you know, and I don't know how old you are. You strike me when you talked about Nirvana and the Pumpkins probably not to be that much different in age than me.
Yeah, I'm 27.
Okay. Oh, so you're a little bit younger, but not much. So, you know,
yeah.
you get, like, you know, as being from the earlier side of the millennial generation, you know, I think
yeah.
that, you know, our generation of millennials are very much less interested in, you know, segregating, you know, races and such in
yeah.
America. And I think it's worldwide, too.
Yeah, and I think that's a great cause for hope, dude. I mean,
right.
it's the same in South Africa, man. You know, there's the younger generations have no living memory of what the country went through.
Right.
And that's a good thing, dude. Like, you know, they don't have that baggage, you know. I mean, it was their parents or their grandparents that went through it. And, you know, the
right.
further away you get from those tensions, I think the better. And the less
right.
it becomes like a living, breathing issue and more a historical thing where we can reference back and learn from it as opposed to,
right.
you know, harboring a huge amount of anger. And, yeah, I mean, I you know, especially when I was at university, man, like, you know, when I saw, like, young people debating and having these new insights, it just made me feel like, you know, maybe the world's going to be okay.
right. And I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I have a hard time believing that my kids' generation is going to have a lot of the issues that we're seeing now.
Yeah.
Because our generation seems to, you know, we're the ones that will be in offices. We're the ones that will be, you know, the people running the big Fortune 500 companies and all that crap.
Yeah.
And so, and by we, I mean people my age, not me, because I,
yeah.
I'm not doing it. But I mean, you know, just the fact is, I think that there's going to be less and less. Now, that's not to say there won't be other tensions. I mean, we're
yeah.
all human, and there's going to be new things that pop up day after day.
Yeah.
But
I also think,
you know,
like, the younger generations, you know, that because they're so exposed to technology and the internet and
right.
connectivity and being constantly interacting with millions of people all the time, you know, that connectivity and that sort of, it almost creates a sort of sense of community and
sure.
the ability to be accessible and to reach out to people and, you know,
global
just
community,
open.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
I think that also helps with kind of creating a little bit of cohesion within society. I mean, it also comes with a lot of bad stuff, but
right,
at least, yeah, you know, I think a younger generation has no connection to these issues. I mean, I'm surprised that Trump has a young following because it just seems so old school what he's saying.
Well, and I think his following, which it comes from one basic fact, and that basic fact is there's a lot of disgruntled people, period, in the country, and he's voicing, I'm different, I'm going to do things differently, and they don't necessarily care about the rest of the message. That's enough. That's,
yeah.
Well, I'm disgruntled too. And, you know, and that's frightening because,
yeah.
you know, they're not hearing the rest of his message. Now, what's interesting about a Trump is that socially he's actually pretty liberal.
Yeah,
except
exactly.
for the Muslim thing, and he likes to, you know, blame
yeah.
Muslims for everything, which is,
yeah.
You know, that scapegoat. But outside
yeah.
of that, and that's a horrible thing. But outside of that, he's relatively liberal socially. When you have
yeah.
the guy he's running against, Ted Cruz, is like the uber religious nut, and so
totally.
Yeah, yeah. So but he's just isn't getting the press right now. But
yeah.
so you know he's very much the standard. Evangelical
yeah.
right wing guy, and unfortunately, I think every election's got one.
for us in America.
Yeah.
And he's at one right now. But, you know, I'm not a Democrat by any stretch of the imagination. I'm actually much further left than most Democrats. But that's another story.
Really?
For another day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, the election process in America is very it's very foreign to me, because it doesn't feel like there's actually as many options as you may think. You know, there's always like the two guys, and there's one guy saying that and one guy saying that, and those are your options eventually, you know.
Right. That's it.
And
it
I don't know, yeah, it's a very interesting time, man. I mean, I'm very curious to see what happens. Like,
yeah.
You know.
It's going to be interesting. And the thing is, you know, as a country that's this big world power, what happens here does affect everyone internationally.
Totally, yeah. No, I mean, it does.
I mean,
everyone felt the economic crisis, and you know, all the horrible stuff that kind of got left behind. You know, in South Africa, we're feeling it. You know, there's
sure.
economic problems, and governments are, you know, constantly blaming the global recession. And you know, part of it is that, and part of it is just mismanagement. So,
sure.
you know, it's a nice thing to scapegoat once again.
Well, that's just, you know, that's not going to go away. But
it's
interesting, and I like the fact that I get a chance to talk to somebody from another country to get their perspective. You know,
hope I don't get a whole lot of hate from the Republicans now.
Yeah,
I mean, well, I'm not like trying to like comment on
worry.
Something.
I don't
that
think
I know.
There's a lot of very right wing folks who would listen to my podcast, because I'm pretty open about my beliefs in a lot of things. So,
okay.
I
think it's a fascinating time, man. And, you know, I'm just kind of watching from a distance, and it's just interesting to me.
Yeah. And that's the reason I brought it up, is just strictly that I feel like over the next month, you're going to see some of the more interesting times of what's going on here. I mean, and I'm sure from city to city, there's going to be a different representation of who believes what and feels what, especially, you know, when you're going through, you know, I say coastal sensibilities versus Midwestern sensibilities versus the South, you know, and
I mean, the one thing I was saying before I left, I was like, man, I'm psyched to go to America and just, you know, speak to people on the ground about this whole issue. And I haven't actually met like an ardent Trump supporter. I haven't actually met someone who's like, well, I support Trump, and here's the reason why, and, like, actually debate with me, and then
sure.
I can maybe get a sense of that. But I haven't actually met anyone like that. Like, no one who I'm meeting here actually knows what's going on.
You know, and I
everyone's
live here,
like, yeah.
and I don't know any either. That's the thing. I'm trying to figure out where the support's been coming from, and my wife and I have this conversation regularly. Who is it supporting these people? Because, you know, I have a lot of very right-wing family members who are very much politically very different than me. I'm a pastor's kid. So I grew up, you know, in the church. My church was kind of middle ground, not very liberal or conservative. But, you know, I have a lot of family members who are much more conservative than I, and on both my wife's side and mine. And none of them are supporters of Trump at all. And it's really, really intriguing, because I can't figure out, and maybe it's because of where I'm at. I mean, you've been on the East Coast so far, and maybe that's part of why. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd think with a guy who's getting as much support, there would be a lot of people who are like, "Yeah, dude, this is great," and you know, this is what I think. And
sure.
I would love to hear someone talk to me like who truly is a supporter and be like, "Yeah, dude, but this is the reason, and you know, you got to think of it this way." And I haven't met anyone like that at all, like in the last.
Right.
You know, 2 weeks that 3 weeks that I've been here, but I don't know. Maybe I still will.
Well, and yeah, I'd be interested to hear if you do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm psyched to debate this. So I would just love to hear like real reasons why this is happening.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. And I mean, I'm sure just getting to hear somebody from a different country talk about it, I really appreciate it. Because it's just I don't know a lot of folks from I don't know really virtually anyone from your country other than one person, like I said. And I talk to friends who are Canadian, I talk to friends from Europe, but not a lot of people from your continent even. So you know,
well,
I
represent the whole of Africa, man.
Yeah, I know, man, that's crazy. You know, so
that's great, man. Well,
definitely. Hey, well, I'm going to let you roll, because I know you got probably some stuff going on. But before you do, thanks again for the chat. And maybe we'll talk again sometime soon before you leave the States. But
Yeah, man.
Before you roll, why don't you tell everybody how they can check out your stuff, where they can find your tour dates, all that kind of stuff.
Cool. I'm on Twitter. It's Jesse_Clegg, JesseClegg. On
Great.
Facebook, it's Jesse Clegg Music, and my website is jesseclegg.com. All the tour dates are on the website. We're hitting coast to coast. We're doing Canada. We're probably going to be wherever you are, if you're listening. and we're going to be touring until the 2nd of May, so we're going to be all over the place. So, check us out.
Wait for me, I'll wait for you. I can't tell you what to do. Oh, in the darkness I can feel you. Play the thief, I'll play the fool. Let the sky come over you. Oh, I will fall into the blue.
Started working there fall 93, and
all those bands had graduated from Caroline and gone to Geffen and, you know, and
right
and whatnot and blew up. So it was an interesting time to do the, you know, to work there and whatnot. Of course, we had Bad Brains in the past there, and of course, Misfits material had always had been released through Caroline for, you know, many years by that point.
That's awesome.
And yeah, so that was a lot of fun to start
as a
there.
Punk rock guy at heart, you know, for me, you know, Bad Brains and Misfits, that's pretty dope.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they were projects that, you know, I started, you know, when I started working for them, I was hired from distribution. Or I started in sales, selling to mom and pop stores, and you know, the basically, you know, the record store day kind of stores of today.
Right.
Back then, and the label was doing a deal to lock in the Misfits material there for life, or perpetuity, as the legal word would be. So. And that was 94 when that was coming together. And Lyle Preslar, who was the general manager of Caroline at the time, who is better known as the founding guitarist of Minor Threat, kept coming over to my desk at the time, my sales desk, and asking me about, you know, Misfit stuff to, you know, confirm things and kind of think about the projects that could be done. And eventually I said, you know, I was like, dude, why don't you just hire me to the label side and I'll oversee all of this. And go figure, he did. So that I was put in charge of the Misfits catalog, the classic era catalog, and started putting projects like that together. I put together and conceived the Coffin box set.
Oh, wow.
Helped mix bonus tracks for Static Age. Release and liner notes and working with all that stuff was
that's really cool. And so your design, you know, background, you were able to do, you know, start using that to, like, you know, actually, like, design stuff.
Actually design stuff, yes. Again, I went, when I went through school for design, we were working on what we call mechanicals, pre-computer.
Right.
So I came out and had zero experience on computers, and yet, you know, the first freshman class after I graduated were required to have computers, and they had them all 4 years, but I had nothing. So I was caught in this limbo. So I bought
a weird transitional time.
Yeah, it was actually kind of terrible, to be honest. And so I, you know, was working with music and then bought a Mac 2CI from Caroline.
Oh, wow.
That they were kind of, you know, getting rid of or whatever. They dumped Quark, like one, Photoshop 2 maybe, you know, on there.
Okay.
And say, well, we don't have tutorials, but you know, for
play around,
money you can buy the computer. Yeah. So started toying around with that, and at that point, not for like the Coffin box set or anything like that, which was too much, you know, for me at the time. I was still new, plus I had to see, you know, I had to oversee every aspect of it that I put together for it. So
sure.
It was a bit much. So that actually comes full circle to Unbuilt in a little bit. But so I was doing those kind of things, and then eventually kind of hit the wall as Virgin kind of kept changing things for Caroline. Caroline Records is owned by Virgin.
Okay.
Which is why
Smashing Pumpkins. Is Caroline Records still a thing? They still record it?
Excuse me. No, not particularly. Not as a record label. They are kind of a indie promotional wing for Virgin and Virgin Capital Universal. Because Universal, of course, bought Capital. Well, that's a long line there. So,
because Virgin gets bought and then Capital gets bought. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, everybody owns everybody anymore. But
right.
Anyway, after I kind of hit the wall there as far as opportunities, because Caroline became a hub for Chemical Brothers, Fatboy Slim, and all that, and so many people were screaming the death of rock. And I, of course, never believed that. And although some of those projects were exciting because it was brand new and it was blowing up and it was an interesting new musical movement, it wasn't going to be my thing and certainly not people looking at me, looking for me to bring those projects to the label.
Right, right.
So I went off to Revelation Records in California for a brief stint.
Now you're really talking my language.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, a period where, you know, the big records, the exciting records for me at the time, of course, short of the catalog, you know, that's the,
uh-huh.
of course, is built in. But, you know, with Shai Hulud was my favorite new act at the time there, working with them on the first album, Hearts Once Nourished.
What years would this have been?
This was 97. So,
okay, so this would have been me, like, deep into the scene in North Jersey, where
oh,
I grew up.
Mm.
And I probably saw Shai, it was a huge scene.
Yeah.
Like, I was there for the early days of, like, Thursday, and Taking Back Sunday used to play our area a lot.
Right.
With their original lead singer, and,
yeah,
oh, God, I mean, like, it was, and I mean, like, I was at Midtown's first show.
Right.
You know, like, just a lot of those kind of things. But, yeah, Shai Hulud used to play all the time.
Yeah.
So,
with Little Chad, you know, in the band and whatnot, and great tours back then.
And everybody knows him now as, you know, Chad from Newfound Glory.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. yes. And yeah, so, and he's, you know, God, he worked it. But at the time, he was, like, 16.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why we called him Little, even though he was bigger than all of us already.
Right.
But, nonetheless, then, you know, that was a short stint. It was, I enjoyed the people, but it was a frustrating scenario because I had come from a very much a marketing situation,
mm-hmm.
where you really wanted to develop bands. And Revelation had done that, but not in a marketing way, just in a timing way. You know, with Today and Gorilla Biscuits and stuff. Bands were just kind of just, they were sticks of dynamite anyway. And it's not as if it was some marketing plan that broke them, and it was getting harder and harder as the years went on to break the band, you know. So it was a different mentality there. A friend of mine from Pennsylvania, who when I went to Kutztown University, which is where I went to school, I was working in Reading and at a record store called Record Revolution, and a friend of mine, Eula Garrett, was kind of our secret shopper. He would just, you know, during the holidays, he would fake shopping and watch for shoplifters.
Interesting.
Which, you know, so he got paid, but realistically, all he did was owe us money because he kept going so deep into the record store, he kept finding everything he wanted. So he ended up owing a lot.
So he basically just supplemented his,
his
addiction there.
Yeah, he earned a discount is what he earned, ultimately, yeah. So Eula... I was big in the very, very, very deep and underground metal scene, very extreme stuff, European and whatnot, and was at Century Media and was handling distro for them. So he was bringing over bands like Emperor and Blind Guardian and things that in America nobody had ever heard of.
Right.
They were very cult-like following and doing well with it. And Borovoy Cregan, who went on to create Blabbermouth, was leaving as A&R director in North America from Century Media, and Eula asked me if I would like to interview for that. And so I did, and I got the job, and Bori and I overlapped one day, and then he went off and did Blabbermouth, and I started doing my thing. And at that time I signed... One of the first things I did was renegotiate contracts for one, like I Hate God. I was trying to renegotiate for Devin Townsend and then settling in with the bands. And Century Media had a lot of bands between Europe and America. So it was trying to figure out who to keep, what direction we're going in, and so on. So the first band that I signed there was Shadows Fall. So Shadows Fall... I actually was trying to sign Overcast. I don't know if you ever caught Overcast back in those days. But that is, at the time, that was Brian Fair, who future Shadows Fall singer, and Mike D, future bassist of Killswitch Engage, their band. And Pete from who was in Seamless with Jesse Leach, also of Killswitch. And so we're seeing this Boston scene happening there. And... At one point, actually, Shai Hulud, Disembodied, and Overcast toured together, and I started talking to the guys during that tour as they played two or three shows in Southern California. And but the bummer is I got a call from the manager one day who was also trying to get me to sign Shadows Fall, but with Phil, later of All That Remains, is a singer who was the lineup at that time. And he goes, I have good news and bad news. Overcast broke up, but Brian's joining Shadows Fall. And I said, they're signed. Consider them signed.
That's awesome.
And so that happened. Now here's a jersey for you. Another mm-hmm. band I signed at Century Media was God Forbid.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I saw a lot of their stuff. Yep.
Yep. So signed them too and things. And, of course, Shadows Fall did extremely well for us. I think we did 10,000 in a year on the first record with them. And the second mm-hmm. record, it was 10,000 in the first week. And the third record, it was 100,000 in the first month.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah,
awesome.
And that was exploding. That was Lamb of God. That was Killswitch Engage. That was Shadows Fall, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of that, I used to call it like the new wave of American heavy metal. And and so it was a cool time.
Funny because like, I'm not like a heavy metal guy typically, but like I know a lot. Like, it's interesting about the 90s in North Jersey is that every bill was super diverse.
Right.
So like I was primarily into like the punk stuff, but like, you know, I knew all the ska punk bands, I knew all the punk bands, I knew all the hardcore bands. Like, I used to book shows from the time I was like 14 until I left for college, and I booked shows down in Philly when I left for college too, but like, so I knew that scene really, really well. So it's funny, like, when you say those names, it's like, oh yeah, I remember God Forbid playing shows, and
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it was good times. So through those labels, that was the large part. I ended up dropping out to, as I call it, dropping out at the time, but it ended up sticking, was I'd signed another band over the years from Birmingham, Alabama. I ended up leaving L.A.
So you said you booked the band from Birmingham, Alabama,
yeah,
and you were ducking out? Okay.
Yeah, then I moved there, and man, I don't know, it just kind of started sinking in, and then 9/11 happened.
Mm.
So when you're looking at coming back up north and jobs and stuff, and things were just kind of in a disarray, so I just kind of said, you know what, I'll wait this out, and we're just going to, you know, hang.
Right.
And I ended up living there 4 years, art directing for an ad agency, which wasn't fun, but also, of course, paid well, but not
right.
creative enough for me, and ended up moving back to L.A., to Century Media, worked a ton with Lacuna Coil and again with Shadows Fall and whatnot. And then ever since then, moved back to my hometown in Lancaster. And
how'd you end up back in Lancaster then?
What's that?
Just miss home? Did you just miss home and want to move back? Or?
I'd say it's more so a thing of... Well, you know, I was coming to the 40 mark,
okay.
I'll say so. So, you know, you come to that, and you could live in L.A., and you could put down, like, $2 million for a 1,000-square-foot house with no earthquake insurance, you know?
Right.
And, you know, so you could do that, or I could do my work from there, you know, via the Internet, as you know. So I could do that, and wow, the money can go a lot farther, and I'm near family again after being gone for like 15 years, so, you know, it's beneficial across the board.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's worked out. I do a lot of design now. To my biggest clients are Universal and Capitol Records, and then New West, which is a kind of Americana label out of Athens, Georgia.
Is there any acts that, you know, I might have heard of from New West?
Well, it's a lot of blues, and then, of course,
so probably
country
not.
And whatnot. So, what's that?
I said probably not, because I don't know a lot of newer.
Yeah.
Like, when I listen to blues, I listen to, like, old blues, and I'm not a modern country guy, so, yeah, probably not.
Right. Well, and I say this about them, is that it's definitely not modern country in the saccharine pop that they just put a slide guitar over top of and call it country.
Right, yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's pop with a slide guitar.
That's all it is, and then boom, that's what you can call it. It's, no, this is the real deal. This is,
okay.
You know, small artists, very, like I said, folk, country,
okay.
Blues combo, but really good stuff, but, you know, the indie stuff. And
that's really cool. I mean, actually, I definitely don't have an issue with country music per se. My oldest son's name is Cash, so You know, obviously, I have Johnny Cash as an icon
yes.
to me, and probably sure. to many. Although he transcends any genre, in my opinion.
No, but... he does. He does. Yeah, and there's no question about that. Right.
Yeah. Well, his middle name is Hendrix, so go figure. Cash Hendrix is my oldest son. But yeah, so we're kind of into music in my family, just a little bit.
Oh,
so
that's awesome. Yeah.
That's awesome. But so now. You're doing, I guess, your own thing, and you have mm-hmm. your own clients. Like, you're not working for a specific, like, Century Media. You were working for Century Media.
Correct.
Now you're actually.
Correct.
And what's the name of your company?
Man Alive Creative.
Was there a specific name for calling it Man Alive?
My mom and her sisters were growing up. There is an older expression that, of course, has
okay.
died off called Man Alive. And
okay.
you would basically just say that. If it was something that kind of shocked you or like, wow, you know,
oh.
go figure. We would say like, man, go figure, or who the hell thought that?
That's yeah.
the kind of thing that but people would go, man alive.
Oh,
and
that's funny.
Yeah, so that's just, I don't know why it stuck. But at the time, another Jersey hardcore reference for you, I was friends with especially the drummer, Rosenberg, in Dead Guy.
Oh, of course.
And so Dead Guy and then Man Alive, like it just kind of had something and it worked, and it was 20-some years ago I named it, so I don't really remember why other than that expression was in my world. And
okay.
and I'm glad because to this day it still at least stands on its own and is unique and not, you know, part of, you know, an expression that's come back per se. So it's easy to find to me, especially with that in my last name, a Polish last name. So.
Yeah, I'll just call you Tom. I wasn't even going to try your last name.
Yes,
but,
that's best. Or I see in music, especially because I worked a lot in metal and hardcore and whatnot, was that Tomb or Tom B. That was super easy. Everybody
okay.
called me that stuff too. So it's easier that way. A Shai Hulud record, they had one of the best thank yous for me, and it said, Tom Begro, what? So for years, I had Begro what as kind of as actually an email address for a long
time. Oh, that's
time.
Funny.
Yeah, but otherwise, my email address is the pronunciation key because you wouldn't know how to do it. So yeah, now I'm working on my own and this project, and so that can be directly with bands, that can be directly with labels, or whatever.
Right.
But I also tend to create what I call personal projects.
Sure.
And those are guided solely by me with an idea created by myself and then, of course, executed and designed by myself. And the beauty about those projects, which Unbuild is one of them, is that I am the art director, the creative director, and I have nobody telling me, you know, like, oh, can you change that color? Like, no. So it's a great outlet personally, creatively. Especially something.
Could, yeah, I can say especially that you get to use, you know, all your creative juices, not just, you know, some of them.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I'm not kind of leaning towards a specific genre of music or something, which, you know, I tend to,
yeah.
of course, naturally have to do because it's somebody else's music that I'm kind of working for or around, you know, and playing in the air while I'm working on it. So therefore, I gravitate toward something that lends itself to them. And
right.
a project like Unbuild, really just up to whatever, you know, I create at any given time, and that's the look and feel of it. So that's something that, you know, Unbuild has going for, which I personally love. You know, it doesn't matter as much to other people, but it does to me creatively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So what is Unbuild for everybody listening?
Sure. Unbuild, how can I put it simply? Unbuild is a biannual...
Mm-hmm.
printed magazine that for culture and lifestyle.
For those who don't know, a magazine is no.
I know. I'm a print guy. I don't
I
really
print myself.
Design. Yeah, I don't design for web. I don't have any interest in doing so. I find that it's just kind of temporary, and it has its place. I mean, you know, I. Personally, I have an Instagram account and whatnot, and I flick through and I like things and I just ignore others, and
mm-hmm.
that's life and that's what people will do. But I like feeling it tangible in my hand, flipping it. It makes the story and the thing more real to me and more impacting than something that I just flip through next, back, next, you know, close,
mm-hmm.
on. So I love it. So it was kind of the challenge was creating something that's also limited edition. I didn't want to just have it out there forever. I wanted to make something short and concise for the right audience. And finding that audience, of course, is always a challenge. But the original idea for Unbuilt was 4 issues a year subscription,
mm-hmm.
4 different musicians handle
okay.
1 issue a piece.
Okay.
From front to back, their interests, their personality reflected, going beyond their stage persona, if you will,
right.
for people.
Right.
You know, digging deeper, like what are they into? What people make an have an influence on them?
So
and,
you're basically with each issue, you have a partnership with a different artist. You know, like
mm-hmm.
you and them developing this thing, and then you've got a whole other one for the next one. Yeah.
Correct. Hey. Yep. You're just letting these, you know, you're just being welcomed into these people's world. And yet,
that's
at the
cool.
same time, the look and feel of it is the same.
Right.
Well, it was a lot, especially when you're talking about practicing musicians
mm-hmm.
and who, like any artist, you know, have challenges in front of them as far as keeping things organized, as far as schedules. A normal schedule, no such thing, you know. So
right.
there were challenges involved there that really kind of made it. And I'm as moody as any artist, so there's you know, there's times where a new project gets put on, you know, somebody else's plate, and then they go, oh my god, I can't handle all this. I got to clear off something. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I don't want to. And so we had, I had several people come and go. Who were totally into it, but then just couldn't deliver for one reason or another. Mostly nothing bad, but mainly just for like schedule or just being overwhelmed. Okay. So, but the two people that kept sticking were Randy Bly and Alex Skolnick.
Well, anybody who's listening who doesn't know who they are, who are they?
Okay. Randy is best known as a singer for the band Lamb of God.
Mm-hmm.
And for other people who may have only casually have heard of him just through his book, Dark Days, which documents his time and dealings with his spending time in jail, in prison, I should say, in the Czech Republic, in Prague, mm-hmm. based on charges that were, of course, ultimately he beat. But Randy is a fantastic guy, a man of the world, and totally interested in things well beyond just what he's known for, which he would describe as basically screaming, you know? So Randy is from Lamb of God, and then there's one of the great guitarists of this era, which is Alex Skolnick. And Alex is best known as being the lead guitarist in the thrash band from Bay Area called Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And he also has great interest in and has a jazz trio called the Alex Skolnick Trio.
Cool.
And has done world music projects with called the Planetary Coalition, which has like 27 musicians from around the world.
That's really
all
cool.
All performing. And yeah, it's incredible stuff. His playing is just outstanding. And so through all those influences of jazz and all this, he has spent most of his career doing what now we're all trying to do with Unbuilt, which is beat down a standard persona about what people think these guys should be into,
right?
And display that really it's not just about them. All we're really being in this sense are like conduits to cool stories, the windows to expose new things. And for myself growing up as in the 70s, as kind of a kid discovering not just hard rock and regular, you know, classic rock and roll, was the dawning of metal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm growing up and, you know, if I'm listening to Rush and Iron Maiden and Accept and bands like that, which I did, is that they all turned me on to things like Accept turned me on to Tchaikovsky. Rush turned me on to Ayn Rand. And then Iron Maiden turned me on to Samuel Taylor Coleridge, the poet, also known as the writer of Rime and the Ancient Mariner, thus the Iron Maiden song. And Rush also tapped into him as well for the song Xanadu, which was a lot based on a poem by Coleridge as well. And so when I remember like seeing something about Ayn Rand on the back of 2112 Rush and going like, I gotta check this out, going to the library, getting the book and reading it in a day and just being like, you know, mind blown, like it's not just about school and my friends. Like, there are ideas out there and people and thoughts that are, like, way out there. And so in our minds, in my mind, setting this up was exposing people to people they may not have heard of normally, because a lot of people stay in their internet pockets. Well, I have my contacts, so that's what I look at. But what about beyond those moments, you know, like a cool director of this, or an activist artist from here, or, you know, musicians on Broadway that are otherwise hidden. Like, what's the life of a Broadway musician? Well, Alex tackled that. You know, a writer of a kid who joined the military and fought, you know, in the Middle East, and came back and wrote an incredible award-winning book. And, you know, Randy sits down with him and talks about, you know, these topics. And so it's, you know, architecture, or, you know, just whatever we're finding and discovering and want to expose people to. So, yeah. So that,
well, that's pretty cool, man. Yeah, that's a cool, so, it's cool, cool vision. And it's definitely, you know, and so is the first issue out, or was it just announced?
It is just announced. It is okay. At the printer, and coming together. April 26th, it, you know, we'll start shipping to people. And, yeah, I mean, we're thrilled about it. I mean, I think when I sent it to them, you know, they, to those guys in particular, they're on tour, they're around the world, they're working on these pieces in buses and in venues and strange places, you know, and editing and putting their articles together, as well as I'm doing that at home. And they're all kind of individual pieces, as if they're scattered on the floor. And the fun part about designing them and piecing them together, and another thing that I, another word that I use, is called pagination. Put them in order, and, you know, and what goes to what? What's the flow? What's the look of things? And then, you know, what topic should follow what topic? And when it gets really heavy, you can kind of have a lightweight thing to follow, and so on and so forth. And
that makes sense.
Yeah, so bringing it all together then in the form of something, of an actual, what will be a magazine, is it's fun. You know, and it was exciting for them to see. Like, I sent it to them, and I'm nervous. I'm feeling vulnerable, you know, because they could come back and go, this sucks, you know. And, you know, have them kind of flip out and go, man, this is like a, this is a real magazine. And I'm like, I know. But, you know, it's fun to see all those pieces that were on the floor.
Sure,
and how
sure.
Colorful and full of life and, you know, and in print. And so we're excited. There's no question about it. It's not an easy road because, you know, a lot of people just want, you know, Randy to scream and Alex to play a fast metal, you know, thrash lead, you know, solo, those kind of things. But we, you know, we want to find the people that are open to new things and to whatever comes their direction. And it's only twice a year, but it's a, you know, it's a spring and a fall, which are the, for me, the two best seasons anyway. So
of course,
I would have to agree. Right? Yeah.
And well, otherwise, living in Pennsylvania, I mean, of course.
Yes, exactly. Like today, I'm walking home in freaking April, and I'm getting snow, you know, flurries on me. And I'm like, this is getting ridiculous. And so I'm excited for this.
Hey, bring on May, please.
Yes, please. I know where I'm pretty much guaranteed at least 60 as a high, you know, it'd be nice. But, yeah, so it's just a matter of finding those people, and that's what we're going to, you know, continue to work on, and especially to, obviously we're already thinking issue two, but we're you know, we haven't even printed this, but we're excited for this, and
that's awesome.
Always looking to build this forward, so
that's
this is our launching point. So.
Really awesome. And so, you know, obviously, you know, the guys you're working with are both part of the metal world, and you worked in a wide variety of different stuff, you know, but especially a lot of the harder music and, you know, harder alternative and metal and hard rock and stuff. And is that the, I'm just curious, on kind of a related note, is that the kind of music you gravitate towards, or not really, or?
So far this year, the new albums I bought, one would, is a atypical, darker, but still indie rock record.
Okay.
But the other one is a Swedish, kind of stoner doomish Sabbath oriented record.
Okay.
Savages are from London. They're like a post punk Joy Division, Killing Joke, you know, and all that kind of band.
Right.
And I love the new Killswitch Engage record. They're not only friends of mine, but I love them as a band. And so it's more, a little more heavy, but also melodic kind of metal.
Right.
But I am, I, I love things as far ranging as black metal to blue note jazz.
Okay.
And, you know, so I'm willing to go everywhere in between, but the one link of most of the music is that it has a darkness factor.
Okay.
Even if it's
whether
light
it's darkness
and
in the music or darkness in the lyrics or darkness
right.
in somehow. Yeah, I got
just
you.
Just some kind of vibe that makes it that it's like from an alleyway and not
mm-hmm.
and not the, you know, the eight lane freeway in LA.
Yeah, man, you don't want the glimmery lights, you want the
no, right.
You know,
yeah, I wanted to
a little bit of grime.
Darkness in an artist. Even that's why the country can work sometimes, because there's some fantastic places to be there, pockets to discover in that world, especially folk as well. But it just got to have something that can kind of, cut a little bit. And so that's
does it just feel more real to you? Is that like why, or you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, certainly, I don't consider pop music real in that sense. You know what I mean? I feel like all of it is some kind of fake,
mm-hmm.
and whether that's even the performance of it vocally or the instruments. And I'm not against synthesizer. I love plenty of stuff that
mm-hmm.
has that. But it's still just there's something to it that makes it, I think real in the broad sense of like really human and really moving and really dynamic and things like that, yes, then I'm totally with you there.
Yeah.
I think the rest of it is kind of manufactured. There's a great Neil Young lyric that is, I'm going to paraphrase, but essentially says, well, we've pretty much got everything but the artist here.
Mm-hmm.
So where can we find that person to just plug in here? And and that to me isn't real. I like people write their own songs. I like songwriters. I like bands that, I love a good cover song, but come on.
Sure.
I want to know that when I open up a record that if I found out a band, all their songs are written by random collective people from elsewhere in the world, I'd be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I completely get what you're saying. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And, as a guy who supported, indie music my whole life, I get it completely.
Right.
And it's interesting, too, the way you described putting your magazine together, the pagination, reminded me so much of putting an album together.
Yep.
The ebb and flow, the ups and downs, and it's definitely very musical in the way you described it. And I that makes sense, because that's the world you come out of and the way your brain kind of works, it sounds like,
Yeah, totally. I as being A&R and working with bands and studios and production of things, that's a thing that I can't escape. Like, I've helped
mm-hmm.
sequence many records in my life.
Right.
And growing up, I used to analyze, like, a great 80s album had two burners to start. Then you kind of get a mid-tempo to settle in, and then, a dark track before the end, and the album ender, side two, of course, always was like epic, left you like, because you're going to be another 2 years till you get a record. So, they want to leave it.
You got to leave it with that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Something just
punch
like
to the
gut.
Yeah. I got
anthem and epic. So, yeah. So I love that you mentioned that, because it is about ebb and flow and peaks and valleys, like life. No great book,
right, of course.
No great film, no great thing about life has ever not had ups and downs. And in music, that can be speed and breakdown,
mm-hmm.
especially in hardcore. You have Cro-Mags or something. And,
All
the speed sets up that, like, halftime, just mosh, breakdown.
Yeah, it goes from, like, that thrashy, fast speed stuff to, those breakdowns for sure. Like, I completely, and that's on the harder music realm, I tend to gravitate more towards the hardcore side than the metal side, I think, although I like a little bit of everything, but I guess it's just because I'm kind of, I really musically grew up, once it became my music, it was really a lot of punk rock,
And so
of course hardcore is, something that pulls me, but like, also, we're talking about the ebbs and the flows and like putting an album together, I don't know, if you're a fan, you mentioned even film. I'm a big film guy. I've been writing, more about film lately than anything. Just 'cause I'm writing for a couple film sites now. It's
right.
Something I've kind of dove into, and the one of my favorite films is High Fidelity, John Cusack.
Sure.
And the way he talks about the art of making a mixtape is exactly that.
Totally.
You start it off, in their face, and then you got to cool
mm-hmm.
down, and then,
yep,
and it's funny, so that's exactly it. That's exactly it.
That's awesome. I love the book version of that because the book, of course,
I really do. I can't believe I haven't yet.
It's so different because it was English.
Mm-hmm.
So you had, like, especially things like blues, you had, you know, chess records, and then, of course, so much of the conversation is about things like Elvis Costello and The Clash and things from England that were really impacting those youth. And then to move it in movie form to the Chicago, I'm correct with that, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, because the girl from The Reader is his. Yeah.
So, you know, it's a completely different thing, but ultimately, you know, I had my high fidelity record store, which was Stan's Record Bar here in Lancaster. And
okay.
That was my brother, who was 4 years older than me, who had, you know, this impeccable taste of things well ahead of his, you know, time as far as punk rock and new wave and everything. And and he would pick me up, you know, from school, and we would go spend my allowance money, you know, or whatever I earned at a little part-time job.
Right.
At Stan's, and we would sit in there and look at magazines and play records and just hang in there for 2-3 hours.
Oh, of course.
And that was our place, and so those things are very impacting, and I love that. And see, that's that tangible, pick it up, touch it, feel it, read it thing that a project like Unbuilt still taps into. And call me old, call me what you will, it's just, I just love it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's timeless to me. So...
Yeah. It's weird for me, like, with physical media versus digital media and stuff. Like, it depends on what we're talking about as to what I gravitate towards, because I tend to have very little physical media in when it comes to film and TV and stuff, because I have little kids, 5 and 7, and they've destroyed most of my physical media.
Right.
So, like, even with music, CDs, I don't listen to much. I tend to rip whatever physical stuff I get, just so I have a copy when they ruin it.
Right. But, when, not if.
Not,
but when.
Yeah, not if. When.
Right.
But, but interestingly, you know, when you talk about reading, I much prefer print. And I just got a Kindle. You know, before that, I had a hand-me-down Nook, but I never really did much with it. I got a Kindle mostly more as a tablet than as a reader. But I do buy some books on it because they're much cheaper. So sometimes, like, a book will come out, or, like, there was a book that I really liked, or I really wanted to read from an indie press, and they sold out super fast, and, like, the only way to get it was a PDF version, so, you know, that's what I bought.
Right.
But that said, it's not the same in any way. Like, I like having that book in my hand, and I like having that magazine in my hand. That's, like, you know, whether it comes to stuff about music or it comes to, like, you know, I read one of my favorite magazines in the world is the quarterly magazine put out by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Because I'm a weird nerd for, like, hate groups. I hate groups, but I've always been fascinated by them. When I was a kid, I was involved in the local ARA chapter, and I was a punk rock kid, so, you know. You know, that was a big thing. You know, I had a bunch of friends who were, like, sharp kids, you know, so I hung out with a bunch of sharp kids and went to skin shows and, you know, like that kind of stuff. And so, like, that's part of, like, you know, what I grew up in. But it's funny to me how I've become so fascinated with that, but I never go to the Southern Poverty Law Center's website to read stuff. I wait for my quarterly magazine, you know, because it's in my hand. And it's like, you know, it's something about that. And I completely get that when it comes to, either the written word or, like, art. You know, I really like physical art, you know, artwork.
Right.
So, you know, I completely get that. And it's funny how, like, with movies and music, I have moved into the quote-unquote digital age, but I don't think I'll ever move into the digital age with the other stuff, you know?
Right.
So,
well,
I don't know.
Art is something that I wanted to spotlight as well, because I feel the same way, that I think, you know, you would like to engage in it. You like to be in the same air and space as it. And
right.
Not just pixels, but, you know, something. So, the center spread for each Unbuilt will basically is a double spread featuring one art piece. And then
just
their name, the artist name, and their website. And that's it. Just a great way to kind of, like a movie would have an intermission. And so to kind of unwind and go, okay, decompress and just go, oh, cool. You know, something that somebody could, if they wanted to, take out of the thing and put up on their wall, you know?
Yeah, that's really cool.
So, because I feel the same way. about art in that sense. So
really
we want to feature that too. Yeah, yeah. So.
Cool, cool. Well, I'm very excited, so obviously I need to, sign up for my copy, and so I will be. But where can everybody else who's listening, sign up to get theirs?
Well, there's a shop, of course, an online shop that is taking pre-orders at this point.
Great.
And they'll ship again right away on April 26th. Everything will ship out. And manalivecreative.bigcartel.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Easy. Nice.
Yeah, that's the store. It's got a couple things on there. Of course, Unbuilt is the focus. We've got shirts in addition to that. We've got
cool.
Riff Compels Them book, which is a photo book I did with High on Fire, Corrosion of Conformity, and I Hate God all together.
Cool.
One show.
Cool.
There's stuff there, but manalivecreative.bigcartel.com and Unbuilt is the deal.
Awesome. So I'll be linking that up so people can definitely get their copy. I'll definitely be pre-ordering mine, and I'm very, very stoked to check this out. And
awesome.
I'm also stoked to meet somebody who's only an hour away, so we definitely will have to get that coffee. We didn't get that.
Sure, there's always time. If you're on your way
no
to
doubt.
Harrisburg again, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I go for work. I work for the state, you know. I work for Big Brother.
Oh, well, then you're going to Harrisburg.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep. No doubt. Well, just one last thing that popped in my mind, just because you had mentioned Corrosion of Conformity.
Yeah.
The only time I actually saw them live was opening up for Motorhead.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to bring it up because Lemmy, to me, is just such an important figure in hard music.
Yes.
And, totally. And with him passing, I have a personal connection to him. One of his best friends is my wife's uncle. And
we
had a chance to get to meet him, and
cool.
he just spoke the world of, my wife's uncle, and they were such good friends. And, at their televised, funeral, he
right.
was one of the people who spoke, So it was very, very cool to see that. But, it made his death even harder because we had this personal connection to him.
Sure.
And, I'm just curious because he came up in my head and really not just him, there's been so many big name musicians in the last 6 months even.
Yes.
That have just passed. It's insane, between him and Bowie and,
Glenn
Frey and just recently, John Bunch. Just so many people.
I know.
And it's crazy to me.
Bunch. Yep.
When Bunch was young,
memorial
too, so that
show
was even
for John.
Crazy sad.
Yeah.
So, were there any specific of these recent deaths that hit home for you? I was just curious.
Well, obviously, Lemmy across the board. Because, growing up, something I bought right away was this leather-bound collection called No Remorse of Motorhead.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, they made an appearance on a show called Young Ones. It was an English BBC kind of punk new wave kind of underground show.
Cool.
Phenomenal show, but they always had musical guests, and Motorhead were on that too, and they were always a big part of the circle. But I will say, as far as the artistry goes, I also do have a fondness in my heart for great songs, and of course the Eagles wrote many.
Yeah.
Not all for me, but many for that I
right.
that I love to this day. But the Bowie thing was just phenomenal to watch, in the sense of how the world, how his spirit and his creativity as such an icon, not only musically, but of course as just a visual person. Somebody who's
a complete artist in every need.
Yeah, in every way.
Like,
it's
really,
true.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. It's impossible to find an avenue, really, that he didn't explore.
Right.
Lyrically, it's through in poetry to not only fashion and the visual front, video, for movie front and so on, and of course, music. But the one thing about his death, which I thought was fascinating and I thought really rewarding for his legacy, is that he's not necessarily on every classic rock station in the same sense that the Eagles or Pink Floyd or Led Zeppelin or some in Rolling Stones and those bands are, because it's not like you hear Suffragette City dropping in the middle of all that all the time.
No, because he was definitely that alternative side of things.
Yeah.
He was
like an avant artist. So it was in the pocket sometimes, but largely he pushed the envelope. And so he wasn't there, and yet you would have thought he was in the wake because the reverence towards his existence and all that he brought, which I thought was just a fantastic eulogy, you know, to his to his life, and spoke volumes to the way that true artistry can be respected and loved. So although all the others, you know, will be missed in their own right.
Of course.
I thought that watching that unload.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, and I had worked with another band at Caroline, a band called Placebo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, largely, you know, they're, you know, huge UK and Europe during those years, but they were David Bowie's favorite band at the time.
Didn't he do something with them, too?
Yeah, he did.
Like he appeared on one of their albums or something?
Yeah, he did a collaboration with them, and then the beauty was the timing for me of working with them, that must have been 96, was that right when they were Bowie's band, and that meant he had his 50th birthday party show, concert, and after party at Madison Square Garden, and Placebo were chosen to open, so I got to go.
Oh, that's
cool.
Which
was very cool. And so, you know, once a death like that occurs, you not only obviously go to the music, but then you think about your connections, and you were thinking about, your family's connection, you know, to Lemmy, and how it means more. And everybody around the world, and I'm just one person, you were one person, but we're all feeling it personally, and that's the beauty about art that transcends connections. And sometimes, you know, it's when people really feel like they know somebody, even though they never met them. But it's that impact of creativity is something to have massive respect for and love for. And even though I don't like pop music and I think a lot of it is garbage, if it resonates for someone and it may change their life, hopefully for the better, instead of the shallow or whatever, but for something impacting, then that's something to be respected and you know, so...
That's awesome. Well, I think that's a perfect play to end our conversation.
There we go.
Today,
sure.
Know.
Why not?
So I've got this like super high tech thing where, you know, I have a tap on my eye. That's about it.
Oh, sure. Now, hey, whatever works. Today, it doesn't have to be as clunky as it used to be.